Hey friend, welcome. I'm so excited to have you here listening to another episode of the Pattern Design Circle podcast. Here we talk all about the ins and outs of designing knit and crochet patterns and running a business that makes it all possible. I'm Jessica, your host, knitting pattern designer, design mentor, and the friend in your ear. Can't wait to dive right in. The Pattern Design Circle podcast is sponsored by the Pattern Design Circle, a membership community for knit and crochet pattern designers that are feeling lost, lonely, or frustrated in their business. It connects you with a supportive community that's always eager to answer your questions and help you through the hard times. And there's loads of resources and activities specifically catered to business and designing. Sound like your jam? Check it out at snickerdoodleknits.com/design-circle. That's snickerdoodle, like the cookie, knits, knits.com/design-circle. All right, let's get into it. Hello, and welcome back to the Pattern Design Circle podcast for yet another episode. I'm so excited, as always, to have you here listening to me chatting in your ear. It's always so much fun to be able to talk about all things designing and business with you, and today is no exception. Today is another featured designer episode. If you've been listening to the podcast for a little while, you know that I have been sharing some replays for the featured designers on Instagram that I have hosted. And really what these discussions are about are to uncover other designer stories, to share basically about our peers, to see how they got where they got, to understand more about their life as designers behind the scenes, their design process, how they started knitting, how they started designing. And sometimes they'll share things like tips for designers and things like that as well. So it's always such a highlight of my month to be able to talk with them. And I'm excited to be able to then pass those stories on to you here. So today, this episode is all about my discussion with Carol Chan of Casey Knitting Co. She is such a gem. If you're not familiar with Carol, her vibe and her compassion, her empathy for humans, it just really, it resonates with me a lot. And so it was such a pleasure to be able to speak with her on, feature her as one of the designers, of course. And so we'll talk a little bit about it in the episode as well, but Carol is a therapist in her quote unquote day job. So we talked a bit about how that affects her as a designer, and we talked quite a bit about mindset and the toxicity of sometimes the knitting community and the social media aspect of sharing our knitting and things like that. I found it so helpful and really valuable. I love to have those kinds of conversations with folks, and I wish that we had more time to really talk about that topic with Carol, but that was definitely a highlight of the conversation for me. And of course, we talked about her, how she got into pattern designing. We talked about her design process, I think, if I remember correctly. And we talked about what makes her patterns different from other people. So anyway, I hope you really, really loved this conversation with Carol. It was such a joy to have her, and I'm so excited to be able to share the conversation with you now today. So I guess I'll just let you get into it now. I hope you have such a wonderful time listening to it, and have a beautiful rest of your day. Hello and welcome. If you're watching this right now, you're watching the replay, because no one's live yet, but I'm so glad that you're here. Today's chat is a featured designer chat with Carol of KC Knitting Co. So I'm really excited. If you're new around here, I am Jessica of Snickerdoodle Knits, and I host a designer every month. So like I said, this month, we are talking with Carol of KC Knitting Co. And I really like to take a peek into the designers beyond just being knitters and designers. So we like to talk about life beyond knitting, but then also a bunch of their details about how they got started knitting and designing and why they enjoy it and all of that. So I see Carol is here now. I have to get Carol. And beyond that, hello.
Hi.
I always have to adjust. I thought I put it higher and it still wasn't high enough. So anyway, I'm so excited that you're here.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes. So thanks everybody also joining us live. It's always fun to have folks listening and interacting. So feel free to pop in your comments and your questions and all of that stuff too. And if you have to leave early, the replay will be available too. So there's that. I was going to share one quick little announcement because the doors to the design circle are open all month this month. I haven't been talking about it much on Snickerdoodle Knits, so I thought I'd make the announcement here because I talk more about it on the Pattern Design Circle. But just FYI, if anybody's been thinking about the Design Circle, doors are open all month because we have the design along this month. So anyway, what we're actually here to talk about is Carol. So welcome.
Thank you for having me. I've never done a live before, so I'm like, oh, all this stuff is on the screen.
Yes. Well, welcome to the world of lives. It's interesting.
My mom's here.
Okay, so my first question for you is, rather than asking you to describe yourself and everything you do, what are three words you would use to describe yourself?
Oh my gosh. I would say I've always been a dreamer. Mm-hmm. And that, I guess that means a lot of things, but I guess in the word dreamer, there's like hope and love and optimism and idealism all wrapped up in that. Mm-hmm. And so dreamer or dreamy, and definitely passionate. There's a real depth that, oh my God, I'm gonna cry. There's a real depth that I see in life and this existence and what we're blessed with to be here. And it almost seems like that I can't help but be very much in existence, you know. Mm-hmm. And then maybe a third one would be thoughtful. So there's always like what's happening and what you're observing, and then there's different angles to understand them. And I think there's so much interest in that.
Yeah, I'm so glad I asked that question because that's the purpose of these calls is to like dig in deeper. And I feel like when you just ask somebody to introduce themselves, it's like just a surface level, hi, I'm this person, I live in this place, and this is what I do, I design these kind of patterns. But like who you actually are is more like those words that you just described.
Yeah.
So I love that. Thank you for playing along.
And for sharing. Thank you for asking and for obviously touching something in me.
Yes. Now I'm like, I have so many different ways. I've listed out the questions I was going to ask, but I kind of want to go talk about the dreamer part real quick. Or it doesn't have to be real quick. Start there anyway. So have you always been like an artsy, creative kind of dreamer, like as a child and all of that?
Yeah, yeah. It's so funny. I know my mom's here, and I'm like, Mom, you want to chime in? So for as long as I can remember, I love drawing. I love storytelling, make-believe. I've always had this very, very big imagination. Actually, one of my favorite anecdotes is, and so I had two brothers. So I didn't have any sisters to play with, but I loved girly things. And I would gallop around the backyard and pretend I was riding a horse. And my horse's name was Tresiferina. And I would just live in this fantasy world, you know. And I would write these little stories. I would illustrate them. I loved, what did I do when I was little? I loved sewing. I loved all sorts of crafts. I took all sorts of art classes. And I think just always like had an idea of like, there's like the life that I live where I like go to school and I, you know, do the kid thing. And then there's like so much more. And there was always an avenue to create that and explore that through writing. And so that's really, I think, the first foray into creativity was through writing fiction.
I love that. There are like parts to that where I can relate because I was very much into crafty hobby kind of stuff, but I never was like the artistic kind as far as like drawing and sketching and painting and all of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have much of an imagination. So for the longest time, I didn't think that I could be artistic. I didn't think that I like could be creative. When I first was, so I started my Etsy shop selling hand knits and got bored with it pretty quickly. And I was like, basically there are two routes if I want to keep in the fiber industry that I knew of that I could go: yarn dyeing or designing. And at that point, we were still in college. I'm like, I don't have the finances or the space for yarn dyeing. Yeah. And I don't have the creativity for designing. So, and then, you know, like 2 or 3 months later, I suddenly had a bazillion design ideas and, you know, kiboshed that whole idea. But I just love, I don't know, I love hearing about other people that it's like, we're similar, but at the same time, we're very different. And that's like what makes a whole community what it is, because we're not all the same, but we do have similarities.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so funny that the way that you would understand it was that, you know, that you weren't very, you were crafty, but not, you didn't have an imagination, you know, and it's this duality, right? Where I remember my mom used to always say, and she would say this in Chinese, I don't really know what the English translation would be, but she would talk about like my like dexterity. And she would say that my hands were very qiao. So that's the Chinese word. I guess it's like deft or dexterous, right? Like very good with your hands. And I used to braid hair. And now I'm remembering that in high school, I'd have my friends come over before dances and I'd do their hair, you know? And so there was that aspect of it. And yet there was also this feeling of me not being very mechanically talented, you know? Like I couldn't, I carpentry is not a thing that I can do, right? And I always thought, oh, well, maybe I'm more into like the soft arts. And I don't have like this skill, this dexterous skill, which I didn't start knitting until like I was almost 30. I just never thought that it was something that I wanted to get into. I can't even tell you what my opinion of it was before I started doing it. Other than not for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So interesting. I find it really interesting. But I find it interesting how like all of the other artsy things, I have such a hard time what's in my head to become a reality. But like designing somehow is different. I was actually just thinking about this the other day, and I wonder if it's like because I'm actually creating something in my head instead of based on what I see other people doing. So it's like I have this idea of how it's going to look and feel and the kind of textures, but I don't actually have the full picture in my head. And so then it works because I can then work it out as I'm designing it, where, you know, like I'm used to seeing paintings that look like XYZ and that, you know, I was just thinking about graphic design stuff the other day because we're working on a Kickstarter campaign for a book collaboration we're doing inside the design circle. And I'm like, I have such a hard time. Like, I know what I want, but I can't make it what I want. So anyway, I just thought it was really interesting because I was just thinking about that the other day. And I think it's because, like, I'm so used to in the other arts trying to do other people's definition of what is beautiful or things like that, where somehow I've given myself the flexibility in designing to do my vision.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it also sounds like with your design process, it's you start with one piece of it, and then as you build upon it, it becomes something that's the whole, Whereas I think that maybe that's a type of creative process, and that sounds similar to mine. Whereas, like, although I started out my life drawing, and I used to be a much better drawer, like, I'm not a very good drawer now, but, you know, I see other designers who have these, like, amazing sketches, and I'm like, what? I don't even know. What did you do there? Like, this just starts as a tiny little stitch pattern in my head, maybe, you know, or I have to actually make the swatch and play around with it, and then it'll just grow from there.
Yeah.
Rather than, like, having some idea of, like, oh, this is the sweater I want to make, like, that hardly ever happens.
yes. So maybe do you want to share a little more about your design process, since that's what we're talking about?
Yeah.
Are you inspired? What are you inspired by? That kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm inspired by stories and feelings. But that came a little bit later. I think when I first thought about designing, my first kind of rule was that I didn't want to design anything that already existed, you know? And so I think there are different kinds of designers out there. There are designers who where this is their livelihood. And I think maybe this is what your design journey is. And so when you do that, you really want to have a base collection, right? And so, like, I'll probably never design, like, a basic sweater, because there are plenty of other basic sweaters out there that are perfectly fine. And so I thought, you know, if I'm going to add myself to the mix, and this was 3 years ago, so I think there are way more designers now than there were 3 years ago, but if I'm going to add myself to the mix, I'm going to add something that's unique. And that became, like, my standard. So if I had an idea that was like, oh, this is like a really basic chevron, I either needed to scrap it immediately and not think about it, or how can I build upon this so it's something unique? And I want to add a level of interest to people's options, right? So I remember when I was a hobby knitter that I would see designs that were just so inspiring because it was something I'd never thought about before. Or it was something that just looked so beautiful and intricate, and I thought, I could never do that. But somebody wrote a pattern for me to do that, so can I do it? You know, and that was really what I wanted to share with people. And that really becomes my kind of the bar that I set for myself when I think about designs. So, you know, if I want to make a shawl, okay, let's start with the basic shawl. Like, what shape and what are, like, the basic textures? And then how can I elevate it and make it something that is just that much more interesting?
Yeah. Yeah. So are all of your patterns self-published, or do you work with third-party publishers?
All my patterns right now are self-published. I have a couple things in the works later this year.
Because that can definitely... I feel like we have pretty similar design processes, but that then, like, puts a twist on my creative process, because then it's like, now I'm, rather than just, like, being completely free to create what I want, I'm taking into consideration this publication. Mm-hmm. They have a whole lot of other considerations to take into. Mm-hmm. So then it's a little bit different for me. But have you found that to be true for yourself? Have you, for the couple you have coming up?
Yeah. Well, I think the thing that I ran into was there's a cap to, like, how crazy you can get. And I was talking to another designer friend of mine, and I was kind of like, oh, I need to get this done for the deadline, you know? And I was like, I just like find myself, and I was so excited about this design when I was first thinking about it, you know? And I was like, now I'm just like, it's like pulling teeth. And she was like, it's because it's someone else's thing now, you know? Mm-hmm. And I find that to be, it's so psychological, right? I get it, you know, like I'm a therapist, my real life, get it. You know, as soon as there is some sort of like you're saying, third party or like outside constraint put on something that feels so fluid, something that feels so so spiritual, right? Then it almost, I don't want to say it kills it, that's really dramatic, but it sort of dulls it a little bit, you know.
Yes. Yes. I understand. It is interesting. So like I started off very similar to you, as in like wanting to have very unique kinds of things, but I realized, or it kind of was a process of realizing, but kind of maybe became really clear to me about a year ago, that I wasn't 100% loving using what I designed. So mm-hmm. I liked designing these things that were new and unique and not what I was seeing elsewhere, but then I wasn't actually interested in wearing it because my actual style for wearing things is very simple and basic. Mm-hmm. And so it's been interesting for me. I still haven't really found that balance yet. I have a couple designs coming up that I think are doing a lot better of that, but like, how do I still create interesting designs that are a creative process for me, but then they're still the kinds of things that I love to wear?
Yeah. I feel the same, you know, and I think about like my first year of designs, and they were things that I loved at the time. But we grow older and our tastes change. And so now I'm like, they're still beautiful in terms of like, this is a work of art. Mm-hmm. I can appreciate the detail and the craftsmanship and all that stuff, but I don't wear them.
Yes. You know?
I have thought about that in terms of like you were saying, like how do I merge that? And I think it's a really interesting way to evolve. Whenever you have a creative practice, right, it needs to grow, it needs to evolve, it needs to change, otherwise it's not creative anymore.
Yeah.
And a lot of what I've been thinking about for this year is how do I take what feels unique and put it on something that is wearable? Or how do I merge these? Or how do I take classic looks, right? Timeless motifs, timeless structure, and how do I put it into something that is also modern, right? And wearable and versatile. And honestly, I think a lot of it is has to do with the materials that I use. So I've definitely noticed that my taste in yarn, both for designs and for personal knitting, whenever I get a chance to do that, is very, very different from a few years ago.
Yes.
And then they create different garments and it's a whole different look.
Yeah. And also the colors play such a huge role too. That was something else that I started to realize, like, didn't feel like my designs were actually in alignment with me. And what I enjoyed was I did a lot of symbolism for a couple of years. So I just had my third design anniversary. So we've been designing about the same amount of time. But the first couple of years I did a lot of symbolism where it was inspired. So like, for example, I had three collections that were location based: Montana, where I grew up, North Carolina, where I live, and then Canada as a super bulky collection that was the neighbors. But then they were very much based on things like trees and forests and mountains and plains and farmland and things like that. And so then I used the colors that then tied into that symbolism. And it made a lot of sense while I was designing it. But now it's like, all right, what do I do with these things now? Like, basically, I wear gray all the time, blue and purple, and these are not my colors, with a bunch of orange and, you know, anyway, And so that's been something else that's been really interesting for me, just like trying to navigate what's the difference or the similarities as a designer versus as a knitter. Mm-hmm. And how do I want those things to overlap? Because there's no right or wrong answer to that, but it's really a matter of like, why are you creating these things and what do you want to do with them, I think.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's something that I started to think about as well this year. So this year, the theme of this year is the Buffalo Rose. So I'll take this off and I'll show you. So I have a pattern coming out next week, which is like the first in this series. And it's Buffalo plaid with a rose overlay. Mm-hmm. So it's three color Shannon color work. It's really cool. It's coming out Friday. And so I'll have, this is a raglan tee, and then I'll have pullover for adults and children this fall, and then a hat and a cowl this winter, this coming winter. And so I got so excited about this motif, right? Because it's so cool. I think it's so cool. And I'm really surprised that no one's done it yet. In Portland, Oregon, of all places. But honestly, like, I don't wear this kind of stuff anymore. You know, like, I'm wearing it now.
Yes.
I'll probably wear it out a few times, especially if I go to like a knitting event, but generally I don't. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so interesting, right? Like, and I know that there are plenty of other knitters who do wear stuff like this all the time. Mm-hmm. And I'm designing both for me in terms of like, can I do this? Can I write the chart for buffalo plaid with a rose overlay? Turns out I can. Can I do that? And can I make it into different shapes? And will people love this? And I think they will. Mm-hmm. And that's what really it's about, you know. The design process for me is far more about start to finish, like inception, planning, grading, all that stuff, testing, marketing. I actually really love the visuals that go into marketing materials and actually my pattern document. Like, I love all that stuff. And so the actual garment is just a tiny piece of it. Whereas for knitters, the garment is the thing, right? Like, that's what they're making. And that's what I'm providing for them, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's very different than me when I see a pattern for something that I want to make and wear, right? Then it's the designers are not stuff for me. And I'm like, it's just the garments for me.
Yes. You know?
I love that there's such a distinction in what this means as a maker, right? Someone who's making the garment or someone who's making the bones of the garment, you know? And that's really essentially why I started designing in the first place, is because I'd been knitting for so long. And I started sharing my projects. Like, I have a personal Instagram that's private, but I started this KC Knitting Co. as just a public knitting account. And I started posting more projects, and my friends were like, oh, you're so talented. And I was like, no, I'm not. I just follow directions like really well, you know? And like, the real talent is the people who write the patterns, and I could never do that. And then I thought, maybe I could, because how much longer can I just knit other people's patterns? If I'm wanting to continue to grow creatively, mm-hmm. right? And that also became something important because I am a therapist in my real life, and I have a private practice. And it's, being a therapist is a very interesting job because it's emotional work, mm-hmm. and there needs to be a lot of space when you're not working, right? So if you have a job where you like go to an office or you log on to Zoom or whatever it is now, you know, it's a very different level of energy output and interaction than sitting with a client, you know? And my thought was, I need a lot of space in between, but what is the space going to be spent doing? Like, I don't really want to just be idly spending this time. And I had always thought I wanted to have some sort of creative venture, whether or not it made me money, right? I wanted to be doing something that kept building upon itself. And designing really is that, because it's always changing, and I have a lot of freedom in doing it independently, and it is a very different experience than hobby knitting.
Yes. Yeah. I love that. Okay, can we take a few steps back and talk about when you first started knitting?
Like, yeah.
Started knitting, what your first projects were, all that kind of stuff?
I started knitting, I'm pretty sure it was 2009. And I was in grad school. I moved to Portland in 2008. And before that, I had about 6 months off. I was living in New York City. Had a job that burned me out. I quit and lived at home with my parents for 6 months before moving out here. And I was like, I'm going to do something fun. And Portland is such a creative city. What can I do? You know, and I started making jewelry with the intention to like open up a little Etsy shop when I got here, which I did. But jewelry making is not portable. It's not cozy. And it is messy as hell. You know, like, knitting can be messy, but usually you just pick up your project and you move on. You know, like, you can't put all your jewelry making stuff in a project bag and sling it around. You can't do that. And so I would just always have jewelry, like, materials and tools and bits and pieces spread out all over the place. And I was like, I want, like, a cozy, soft craft. So I started knitting. But I was just so impatient. Like, I didn't want to make washcloth. I didn't want to even make a scarf because I don't know anyone, like, all you people who make scarves, like, I don't know why do you do that? It just, like, anytime I meet a beginner knitter who's like, I'm knitting a scarf, I'm like, why are you doing that? You're gonna hate yourself. Make a cowl, you know. So I'm pretty sure that my first project was probably a cowl, or I do remember one of the very first projects I made were these, like, fingerless mitts. Mm-hmm. And then I just got into making hats and cowls and baby sweaters. I didn't make an adult sweater for like the first 6 years of knitting because I was so intimidated. And impatient, you know, I was like, I'm not gonna be working on something for that long.
I love, like, looking back on maybe learning journeys is the best way to put it, but like the things that seem so hard and impossible, you know, even years ago, that once you realize, like, just some practice and learning more about the craft and things, like, it's no longer intimidating. Like, the things that you thought were going to be hard and impossible are now the things that you love. And I just think that's so cool. Because I remember, so I kind of learned a few different times how to knit when I was younger. But when I was in high school, I think it took me 5 or 6 years to finish, but it was a scarf.
It takes so long.
And every time I picked it up, I couldn't remember if it was a knit, like, what a knit was versus a purl.
It felt
like the hardest thing ever. It's like, I'm never going to get anywhere with this. But there was something, like, when I finished that project, and, well, then I also did a matching hat that matched it. That was part of the same pattern. I mean, it was part of the same pattern book. And something about once I finished those two projects, something clicked where I'm like, oh, now, like, everything is just knits and purls, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I can do a lot of things. And I was like, I finished this thing, and I had, like, so much confidence. But, like, aww. I can do anything now. So, anyway, it's just interesting, you know, just the learning process of, mm-hmm. like, you do have to go through the hard part of learning it, but then after that, it's so much more enjoyable, I think.
Yeah. And there's so much of it is about mastery, you know. And so I do think a lot about, so my kind of tagline is knitwear designs for mindful making. I do think a lot about the feelings that we need to have as humans for well-being, you know. Mm-hmm. And these feelings can come from a lot of things. But they're all universal. Like, So like emotionally, we all need to feel needed. We all need to feel like we belong somewhere. We need to feel useful. And so one of these things that you're talking about is mastery. We need to constantly be achieving mastery. And I say this carefully because we are in such an achievement-based culture that I think leads to a lot of stress and shame and burnout. So it's not that we need achievement in the way that capitalism has taught us, but we do need to achieve a feeling of mastery, meaning we start not knowing something, we struggle through it, and then we come out of it knowing something.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And this is one of the tenets that I try to think about when I'm designing. Usually some technique that I include in my pattern is something that somebody hasn't done before. Yes. And they'll complain to me about it. I say, just try it, you know. And so a great example I can think of right now is the tubular cast on, which is also called the Italian cast on. And I have this in several of my patterns because I like it. And I think it creates just a little more of a finesse to your cast on. You don't have to use it, right? You don't. But, you know, for me, I'm like, I've done the long tail cast on 5 million times in my life. I know what it looks like. It creates a nice ridge, whatever. But the tubular cast on is just that much cooler. And there is this sense of, like, if you don't know how to do it, there's one pattern where I think I wrote how to do it. But there's also tutorials that I'll always include. Try it, right? Try it. You don't know how to do it, try it. Fail a million times, you know? Mm-hmm. And I've experimented with it. So the way that I have found to do it, it involves several different needles, right? So like straight needles, the size down, whatever. Play around with it. And then once you do it and it's done and you look at it, it's beautiful, right? And that's mastery. And there is this feeling of accomplishment and satisfaction that comes with that. And that's what I really want to encourage. So the next pattern that I'm releasing is 3-color stranded color work. And it's not intuitive, right? It's not just like a repeating, like, 5-stitch motif. They're freaking roses. you know, buffalo plaid. It won't be easy. And at the same time, the sense of mastery that you will feel when you finish, when you cut off the 3rd color. Yes! Right? And that is so... To me, I think, I mean, I know how it feels. I know it's satisfying for me, but I think it's satisfying for every human,
mm-hmm.
no matter what it is that they're mastering.
Yes. Yes. I love that so much. okay. I'm going to totally change gears. You kind of touched on before, like, how your yarn preferences have changed over time. So mm-hmm. right now, what is it that you're loving and enjoying working with?
I'm really on a non-superwash kick this year. I made it a goal this year to design only with non-superwash, except for the kid stuff. So that's number one. And I think there's just a different feeling that non-superwash yarn has. But that also, I think that it's a relationship with the world around us that is different, you know. And I will say, you know, I continue to love superwash yarn, you know, like when I walk into a yarn store, I'm like, oh, so pretty, you know. And so I have some stash superwash yarn that I've been working with just for like one-off projects. And I'm like, oh man, like I just really miss working with this too. So I definitely have an appreciation for it. I think that the type of colors that can show up on superwash yarn is just, especially with really talented dyers, just second to none, you know. Mm-hmm. But in terms of generally my wardrobe, right, and kind of what my aesthetic is, my personal aesthetic is, non-superwash, kind of more rustic fibers or treatments, and like muted earth tones really seems to be like my jam.
yeah, fun. So then when you're knitting from somebody else's pattern, what do you like in a knitting pattern? Like, is it very similar to the kind of design?
It's not. I think what I gravitate toward is something that maybe I would never design.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because then I don't have to think about it and someone just tell me what to do.
Yes. Yes. And so then how much of your knitting time do you make your designs versus somebody else's designs?
It's the majority my stuff. And I've also really stepped away. So, you know, I think in 2020, everyone was knitting all the time. And then there's been this like gradual, very intentional at times shift away from choosing to spend time knitting for me. Because there is an element of it that can be very obsessive, mm-hmm. and addictive. And I'm sure I'm not the only one. But I on this other kind of like long-term spiritual emotional journey that is really begging for a lot more intentionality and mindfulness and quiet and spaciousness. And there is a way that knitting fits into that. And then there's also a way that knitting can interrupt that.
Mm-hmm.
So my general knitting time has decreased a lot in the past couple of years. So when I do have the opportunity to knit or when I choose to knit, I usually need to work on my stuff.
Yes. Yes.
Because I've given myself all these deadlines. But I will say I like allowed myself to pick up a personal project that I had abandoned for like over a year probably. It was a brioche shawl. I will never design anything in brioche. Like, I cannot, like, it just blows my mind. So I'm thankful for all the brioche designers out there who fill that gap. But I honestly thought I was never going to pick it up again because I was never going to be able to figure out where I left off, you know? But I was like, you know what? Like, this is so beautiful, and I'm already halfway through. I'm not frogging this. So I made myself figure it out. And actually, once I got back into the rhythm, I remembered, you know, what that feeling is, that feeling of mastery, that feeling of rhythm and flow, right? And the real desire to complete something.
Mm-hmm. And it's so different knitting from somebody else's pattern.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause, like, the work's already done. You get to do the easy part. it's a very different experience. Even if you've already knit up the pattern and you're working from your own pattern, it still is, you still have a different kind of brain mindset on while you're working through it than you do when you're just knitting somebody else's pattern.
Mm-hmm.
My struggle is, so I guess back history, I'm a workaholic, have been since like middle school. And so I keep trying to become more intentional about not working all of the time. And because I wasn't a knitter with a capital K before I started Snickerdoodle Knits, it's often easy for even my personal knitting to feel like work, because it's like, that's just like the association that I make with it. Or oftentimes it's easy to be like, oh, I'm making something for myself, but I should take pictures and stuff to share with Instagram and all of this stuff because that's good and, you know, that will be helpful and things
right,
like that.
Right.
And so it can be difficult for me to turn off that work mode with personal knitting. But I also have I have a hard time doing personal knits, but I started a cardigan before American Thanksgiving last year, and I'm like this far done with it. Anyway, it's kind of fun because I've been doing a lot Instagram live on my channel, just chatting every Friday. So sometimes it's a good excuse to just like knit on somebody else's pattern because it's done and it's ready, and mm-hmm. it makes it easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot less thinking.
Yes. Okay, so my next question, which you've already talked about, is the fact that you're a therapist. A, do you want to share anything more about that? And B, how do you think that connects and relates to your work as a designer?
Yeah, I'll share a little bit more about it. It's hard work. I do think that it's a loaded thing because I love it and it's very much a part of who I am, which I don't know if that's true for all therapists, but it's definitely true for me. And also I think it, as soon as people find out that I'm a therapist, it changes how they see me. I don't know how it changes, but I know that it does. But like, I often want to be like, you know, the Us Weekly where they're like, stars are just like us. I'm like, therapists, like, they're just like us. They're just like you, you know?
Yeah.
I think it definitely has informed a lot of awareness that I have around consumerism, Instagram, social media, the kind of undeniable connection between acquisition and like I mentioned before, like obsessiveness or addiction, and a craft that is so easily proliferated, right? Like, we all have a stash, right? And we all joke about stash. I will tell you, the first time that I found out about the Ravelry flashier stash thing, so quickly, for anyone who doesn't know it, every year they have this thread that they open called Flashier Stash, where you just share pictures of your stash. First time I learned about it, I like went on it out of curiosity and was just floored at how much yarn people have. And you know, I am not by no means innocent of this, but I never had a stash until I got on Instagram. I'm like, this is connected, you know, and that this relationship with consumerism, with wanting things, with limited edition things, especially with, you know, with hand dyers who have limited batch, right? There's this one dyer, my gosh, Yama Yarn. Have you heard of her?
I kind of recognize that, but I can't think of what the yarn looks.
Yeah, she's in South Africa. She has just like these gorgeous earth tone, like muted colors, just like beautiful. But she's in South Africa, and her internet sucks. And so she literally just like will be like, shop update sometime on this day, which is usually between 3 and 8 a.m. Pacific time. I'm like, I'm not staying up for five, you know, for all night just to wait for the shop announcement. But then people do that because her yarn is so beautiful. And then they get carjacked. Like, she sells out in 2 seconds. And the shipping from South Africa is like freaking like $50. So, but people want it, right? And I have literally thought, maybe this is the time I'm going to set my alarm for 3 a.m. and wait. You know, and I'm thinking like, you know, so I think about this stuff and I do understand it. And I also, as someone who it's my profession to like, to care about human well-being, like I'm always concerned about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always concerned about how we can all be navigating this balance. Like, how can we still find enjoyment in this? How can we still find actual joy in being on Instagram, which is where we find all these things, which is where we interact, right? It's just become the place. How do I still feel the joy that I used to feel when I walk into a yarn store? Because it's different now,
mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, it is. Like you had mentioned, like, this craft can be like an addiction, an obsession. And my first thought before you got into more about social media was, for me, it's definitely been fueled by social media, because it's like all of this stuff where it's like, oh, everybody else has all of this stuff, so I need all of this stuff, or everybody else has 20 projects going on, so I need to hurry up and make a bunch of projects, and all of these different things, where before it was like, knitting wasn't that big of a thing in my life. Like, I'd make projects for the fun of it, and it was just another one of my hobbies, and I have lots of them, and so I don't spend that much time on any of them. And yeah, it's just, I think it's really, it's interesting.
Yeah. I remember feeling like this pressure to always be knitting, you know? And I remember there was a very, very popular designer who put out a newsletter specifically with tips on how to finish all of your projects. I think she had been asked many times, how do you finish some of my projects? And she was like, here are the tips. And some of the tips were like, fine, you know. And others were like, learn how to knit while you walk. And I was like, no, I can't do that. But I thought about it, you know. Yes. Can I get a cute little fanny pack? You know, and now they have cute fanny packs for knitters. Learn how to knit while you walk. Knit at the movies. I'm like, I'm not knitting at the movies, you know. And it's gotten to the point where when I think about knitting, it's almost like, can I knit silently? Can I do this without TV, without even a podcast, maybe with music? But there have been hours, like, I'll get off work, you know, and there's always this period of time where I like want to decompress before I go do something else or make dinner or whatever. And sometimes I'll pick up a project and I'll just knit, and I'll realize after an hour that I haven't turned anything on. You know, it's just been me and my dog and silence and knitting. And I kind of love that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really easy, knitters in general, but myself for sure, to fall into this trap of like, oh, I can be multitasking when I'm knitting. So like, I'm being either my knitting is my productive part, or the other part is my productive part, and I'm knitting, so I'm being double productive. But it's kind of this whole, like you were talking earlier about this whole, our society that we live in is like, you always have to be productive and accomplishing something and doing something amazing. And so for me, it was like, when I first kind of got into knitting more, I was like, oh, I can justify doing these other things because I'm knitting at the same time. And so now I'm being productive and I'm getting something done. And I don't think that's actually what, for many of us, we actually, is our purpose of knitting? Like, is the purpose actually to be, just to be pumping stuff up out and be overly productive, and, or is it actually to be more mindful and calm? And, because that's a very different kind of mindset. It's like, I have to get stuff done, I'm going to do this really fast, I'm going to get loads done, versus I'm just going to sit and relax and enjoy every stitch and be mindful about what I'm creating.
Yeah. I'm thinking, Emily, is there any other craft that you can do like that? You know, like, I could never make jewelry while I was walking.
Or like painting or sewing.
And so there's something about the relative portability of knitting that has lent it to become this type of activity when it may not have been meant to be. Ooh, and I'm thinking about, like, if you think about, like, very, very, like, classic knitting pieces, you know, they're usually seamed. Mm-hmm. And so if there's really isn't, like, it is something that you sit and you make and then you put it together and you sit at a table, right? Like, don't seam in your lap, guys. Just it's a disaster waiting to happen. But they're the, like, kind of the foundation of the craft maybe is more similar to other sorts of crafts. Mm-hmm. And then what it's become, and you know, everything changes, everything evolves. What it's become has been inserted very handily into this fast-paced, production-oriented culture. Mm-hmm. And we forget then, we forget the foundation and we forget its history.
Yes. Yes. I love that so much. I feel like we could keep talking. I have so many things I feel like I relate with you on. And I'm still only on like question 3 from my list. okay. One more question before we, two more questions before we get into seeing more of your sides. First of all, I want to ask, what are you most passionate about in the fiber arts world?
What am I most passionate about in the fiber arts world? I really think it's helping people understand their own relationship with knitting, you know, with their craft.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're so swayed by messaging.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely am too, you know, like there are times when I see certain designers on Instagram and I think, oh, they're doing that. I'm not doing that. And then I'm like, wait, I have another job. Right? Like, I literally don't have time to do what I'm doing. But what is everyone's own personal relationship with it? And how can this be a craft or a hobby or a practice or however you want to consider it, that enhances your life rather than becomes another coping mechanism, right? Like coping mechanisms are fine, but they're actually not, they're meant to be temporary, right? And so there's this constant wish that I have for people to settle into an actual relationship with whatever they're doing in their lives, but with knitting, like what's your relationship with knitting?
Mm-hmm.
How can you engage with it rather than having it feel like it controls you?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Love that. And like, it's personal. It doesn't need to look like anybody else's knitting. Like, just reminds me of a couple different examples. Like for myself, I struggled for quite a while with like feeling like I'm not a real knitter or a real designer because I don't always just want to be knitting. Like sometimes there's other things I want to do. And alongside those lines is like when people are like out hiking and things like that, like no, I'm not actually going to knit while I'm hiking. Like, if I bring it for me, it would be for a picture for Instagram, and that is like, and so I've actually come, like, where I say more and more often just on my Instagram, like, it's okay if you don't knit all the time. It's okay if you don't feel like knitting. It's okay if you don't bring your knitting with you every single place you go. And a lot of that, it was just like, trying to justify myself, but also sharing that message with other people who feel that pressure around them. But, okay, so then I wanted to talk real quick about your other hobbies outside of designing and knitting. You kind of shared some from when you were younger, but I have a list here that you already shared me with. Do you want to tell us about some of your other interests outside of this world?
One of my big interests, I guess, is my dog. She's been really great for me and just like establishing structure in my life. And so we spend a lot of time running, or being outside walking, trying to find places in nature where I feel like I can let her off leash and she won't like freak out or run away. So I guess that's a hobby. I do really like cooking. And when I feel like I have the mental space, I would like to experiment with different flavors, different recipes. So my favorite thing to do is if I like had something in a restaurant that I really liked, I'll try to recreate it at home. And so either I'll just like try to do it from what I know about flavors, or I'll look up some recipes and just like kind of like meld them together and see what happens. I did Boulder for a long time, from like 2015 to 2020. And then with the pandemic and everything, I stopped doing that. And I just recently started again. And it's very quickly become back part of my routine, which is really interesting because I don't think that it was so much a part of my routine when I was knitting a lot. So it really has been this give and take, right? Like, so there's an evening that I have free. Am I going to go to the gym or am I going to sit and knit? And usually I go to the gym, you know. And there's a lot more to say about bouldering and how it also like is a parallel to kind of mental health and kind of reaching the pinnacle of your well-being. But I'll just leave it at that's something I spend a lot of time doing. And it's interesting, like when I first started bouldering, I was like, am I going to be able to knit if I'm like constantly like working my arms and hands to the bone? The answer is yes. How they work different enough muscle groups that it is possible.
And then you also sometimes like writing poetry, right?
Yeah.
Do you share it on your Instagram much?
No, I have shared a few of my personal Instagram. It's a lot of it is for kind of my own healing. It comes in waves. So right now, a lot of what I'm writing is more kind of long form. But there was a time when I ran a poetry night, like a spoken word poetry night, locally. And that was probably one of the like most interesting times of my adult life, where I just was like, I was running the show, you know, and I created a space for a community and people loved it. And I did it for, I don't know, almost a year maybe. And there's always a thought that I have of like, how can I make this something accessible for others, right? Like, is this something that will help others? Or is this something where I just want to like show people so they can be like, wow, you're such a good writer.
Yes. Yeah, that's so cool. So is poetry, writing poetry part of like a regular practice as well? Is it something that kind of comes and goes as you're inspired? Or
yeah, it kind of comes and goes. I sort of just listen to when there's a lot of, maybe there's a lot of words, or there's maybe a lot of some sort of energy that wants to come out in that form, and then I'll kind of listen to it. And other times I'm like, I don't really have anything to say.
Yeah. And then, you know, like when you keep it to yourself, it feels like then there can also be less pressure to keep creating. Mm-hmm. You know, like sometimes when you start to share something and people enjoy it, it can feel like there's pressure to keep creating that thing, even when you're not inspired to do it.
Yeah. I've definitely felt that way.
And then the last thing that you had mentioned was that you started an acapella group.
I did.
Cool.
Many years ago.
Do you still sing a lot?
No. I mean, I'll do karaoke. I used to do a lot of karaoke before the pandemic and when I was a little bit younger, like, you know, mid to late 20s, I think. I was doing a lot. And karaoke is a big thing in Portland. So mm-hmm. There's like always an opportunity to do it. And so that was really mostly where I got that out. And there's a certain like performance aspect of it that I really enjoyed that like I don't enjoy in my real life. So like karaoke is like my karaoke life. But yeah, so now and now like we've gotten back into doing karaoke, but we do like private room karaoke because we're a lot older now.
Yes. So I love what you just mentioned about like being like your karaoke life. I love that like when we have multi-passionate and we have all these different interests, it's like we really can take a look at different parts of our personality and accept that, you know, like there are different parts of us that shine in different environments, and that, like, that's okay. You don't have to be like a static person that shows up the same way in every situation.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, let's go ahead and get into your designs. First of all, how do you describe your designs? Like, if somebody were asking you what kind of things you create, how would you describe it?
Interesting things for intermediate knitters.
You want to show us? Well, do you have your poncho design? That's what you said was probably your favorite.
Yeah. So this is the Tenderwood. I'm especially, so it's a cowl neck, which I never know if I should show the, okay, so cowl neck, and then it's a pretty classic color work motif, and it has, like, this triangle shaping, and it has this cool, like, column down, you see it, down the front. It is three color stranded, but you can get away with a lot of duplicate stitch for some of the third color. The reason this is my favorite is because it was one of my earlier designs before I felt very confident in a lot of shaping, and I was just like messing around, and I wanted to make a poncho because like ponchos are so cool. And I knew I wanted a big cozy poncho, and I was like, I think this will work with the shaping. I think this will work. And it worked. And not only did it work, but then it was, like, freaking amazing, you know? just so many aspects of it were this kind of intuitive but experimental mindset that I think is so important with creativity, because you have to take risks, you know? You have to take risks. And since the Tenderwood, I've taken other risks in design. Some of them failed miserably, right? And, like, probably two of my favorite design stories are, there are two designs that I've cut in half because they didn't work. Like, I finished a sample, and then I was like, oh, no! I'm going to renew this whole thing. So I literally cut it in half to, like, redo it.
Yep.
And that's kind of the level of experimentation that, like, I think you have to be okay with if you want to challenge yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's this, you know, especially when you're doing it as a business and stuff, there's this dichotomy between wanting to be efficient and, you know, like, trying to reduce the amount of time that it takes to design a pattern and, you know, all these things. But then at the same time, that doesn't actually go that well with the whole creative aspect. Because that is a whole process that you have to, like it isn't necessarily efficient to cut. I've also cut apart my design and had, you know, re-knit the top half and then decided I didn't like it and re-knit the top half again. And so it is, it's interesting, especially, you know, for folks that are trying to make it an income and things like that. It's interesting. I don't know what else to say about it.
I think about it as like as learning, as school, right? Like, if you were going to get a degree in knitting design, I'm sure that at some point you would be struggling with something, right? And that you would maybe spend a lot of time on something. And when you're in school, there's no expectation that you should be making money, right? You're in there to learn and fail and grow and all those things. And as an indie designer, you don't necessarily go to school, or if, you know, you can take ad hoc classes, but there's no school, there's no program, official program. And so a lot of people learning on their own. And that's what I was doing, was I was like, all right, well, I guess I'll learn how to cut knitting in half.
And, yes.
And I got really good at Kitchener stitch, you know, like, it's just what you do.
Yeah.
And it's like with any sort of learning. And, you know, again, like to tie in like therapy, like I talk to a lot of my clients about just trying new ways of being. Mm-hmm. Right? The way that you're being isn't working for you, which is why you're here. So try a new way of being. Mm-hmm. And it might feel weird or it might not work.
Yes. Yeah. You can always change it. Yeah. Yeah, so what other designs do you have with you to show us?
I have my Willa cowl.
Yes.
So this is, it looks like three-color color work, but it is not. It's only two colors at a time, but you do use one main color and three contrast colors, and you just alternate them. And actually, I'm going to be doing a knit-along with a yarn store in New Jersey pretty soon here. I think we're going to start it in May. And Emily of Woolen Palette, who is the dyer that I worked with for this, she's going to be coming up with different palettes for spring. So it'll be a really cool opportunity if you haven't made one to make one and to have some more spring colors to choose from. So the Willa. And then this is my very first design, Burgeoning.
So pretty.
Yeah. So I definitely like, when I said that I wanted my designs to be like interesting and like not easy, this is my first concept. Yes. and I also was like really amazed that I made a tank top and it worked. And then this is Road's End. I released this last summer. It's probably time for me to start showing it again on Instagram for like seasonal. But it's this cool kind of fade color work. It's also only two colors at a time. Just a really cool little tank top. I like it a lot.
Yes.
Yeah. And then I'll show this one. This is tea. So this is a mock neck cropped. So there's two fits that I wrote it for. This is the boxy fit, and then there's a fitted fit. and this is my most successful pattern to date. And I wanted to specifically show this today because it's called Tea, T-H-I, and it's named after my sister-in-law, who just had her second baby last week, and it was a pretty difficult birth, so I just wanted to honor her and show her some love. Mm-hmm. And she's an incredible woman, and I was so happy to write a pattern and design a top for her, and then to also have that be the most successful pattern to date. I just think it means so much to me and to her. So
yes,
sending her and her new baby lots of love.
Yes, so sweet. I love that. I always love when designs have stories, and you get to, because it just adds, I guess, a layer of connection. Just understanding things on a little bit deeper level, and just gives it more value, and you can appreciate it just that little bit more.
Yeah. And I always want to think of what I'm doing as art. Right. And so again, to contrast with, you know, somebody who's building a collection of basics, right? Like, that's just not what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And can there be a story behind something? Can there be a reason that I'm putting another thing into the world? Right. And can there be some sort of emotional journey that is honored every time somebody buys the pattern, reads the pattern, and kind of makes, you know, they make something out of it, right? And there are all these teas running around, right? They're all over the place. And each time I see it, I think, you know, this was something that I created in honor of somebody who's very special.
Mm-hmm. Yes, love it. Okay, now tell us a little bit more again about your new design coming out.
Okay, so it's called the Buffalo Rose Tea. It's a collaboration with Forest Lane Fiber Co., who I think is doing awesome things for non-superwash yarn. especially because her eye for color and her hand with dyes is just amazing. So you've got the combination of sourcing really great wool, and then making it look beautiful and unique. I'll stand up again. So it is a short-sleeved raglan buffalo plaid motif with a rose overlay. And let's see, it'll be coming out next Friday, and there will be, so I think Larissa and I are talking about both having some, not necessarily like kits available, but having some color combos that you can choose from, or choosing from a la carte. So the yarn that I used is her Rambouillet Sport, which is so cool. It's so toothy and also like really light. So I think it's really important to understand the sort of fibers that we use with certain designs. So because this is three color stranded color work, like you probably want to use a woolen spun. Like you don't want to use a five ply. Like you're just, you don't. Because it's a spring weight top. So yeah, look out for that. I'll probably start promoting it next week in time for the release on Friday.
So fun. So exciting. And then just in general, if there are folks from my audience watching, where can they find you?
My Instagram handle is KC Knitting Co. And then my website is kcknittingco.com. And my Ravelry name is KC Knitting Co.
It's so much easier when they actually all line up. Well, thank you so much for joining me. You know, talked even longer than an hour. So really appreciate you being here and sharing so much, like kind of a peek into your world and what is behind the designs of KC Knitting Co.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah,
you're such a welcoming host. Definitely didn't feel like over an hour.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. I hope that someday we will meet up in person because you are close to my in-laws. So it should happen eventually.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, thanks so much. Thanks to everybody who joined live. If you're just copying on now, the replay will be up in just a few minutes. So thanks again and have a good end to your week.
Bye.
Bye. Wow, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you found it valuable, please share the podcast with a designer friend. And if you have a minute, leave a review. It's so helpful for me and means the world to me. Chat soon.